That's good. I'm going to go ahead and get started, guys. It's 2. I appreciate you making your way out here after a slightly shortened lunch. I know that probably is slightly different from the title outside, but the talk's still the same. We're definitely talking about proven strategies for sharing code between Windows and Windows Phone. You may have noticed that. You may have noticed my clicker's not working. Oh, there it goes. So you're not with Microsoft, and that's my best troll face. I work for a company called Clarity Consulting out of Chicago, and we've been building XAML apps and top-tier apps for quite a while. And this talk is really the culmination of a lot of experiences and tools and patterns that we've kind of developed over time to really kind of make this experience a decent story. I'm also a Windows Phone Dev MVP. I've been doing Windows Phone Dev for quite a while. Love the platform, and it's exciting to see them on this convergence path. Might be close to this thing. I do have a phone to give away, so I will randomly come up with a question at the end of this, and maybe like the fourth hand I see, I'll be able to give it away. It's a Lumia 920 developer device. I don't know if this clicker's dying, but I'll probably have to hit this. So this talk is about sharing code. We're going to break it up into 3 parts. So designing for both. There are design considerations to talk about. Design is not just the visual look, but how it works and how it operates and the information architecture and the way people use it. We want to talk about that. We'll talk about developing. That's the meat of it. That's probably why most of you are here, about sharing code, sharing assets, sharing skills. And then we're going to talk about some architecture and patterns that have developed that you may not have seen before that just make it a little bit easier as time goes on. Whoa. So the app we're going to be talking about is called Real World Stocks. I have been building this app for a long time. It's what I use to mostly experiment with things and just kind of play with different technologies and experiment with different ideas. So I will flip over really quickly to kind of see these two running. So this is the Windows Phone version. It's just a list of stocks, symbols, and things. And if you pan over, you'll see news. You can tap on any of these and launch out to the browser. So that's the Windows Phone version. And then we also have the Windows RT project. And if you run that, you'll get a similar but not quite identical experience. It's more the Windows 8 design language, so it's more horizontal and a little bit different experience. But we share a lot of code between these two projects. So that said, we're going to be talking about that once we get through it. Thank you. So designing for both, as I mentioned, it's not just about the look of the products you're building. It's just how users are going to interact with them. What are the use cases you're trying to solve when you've got a phone or whether you're on a PC and things like that? But first, what do they have in common? They're C#, they're .NET, it's XAML, WinRT, obviously Visual Basic, things like that, but it's .NET, it's the stuff that you've been doing forever. And the APIs, this is a fairly scientific Venn diagram of the amount of APIs they share. They're not identical, of course. Windows Phone will have different APIs than Windows in certain cases that are used for different things, but there's a lot of surface area that's identical between the two, which will be very beneficial as we start to see. And they have the same design language, and this is, I think, very important. You don't have to learn 2 different design languages. You don't have to learn how to necessarily style things differently. You've used these apps possibly if you have a Windows Phone, if you have a Windows 8 machine, and you can see the similarities. And as far as how they differ, it's really in form factors. I mean, Windows Phone has exactly 3 resolutions. They automatically scale to all 3 of them, which is amazing for you as a developer. You can handle all these devices without having to really do much work at all. And Windows Phone, of course, or Windows itself can scale, and there's that 3200 by 1800 from that new Samsung laptop that was announced. I mean, we're talking some serious resolution here. So just think about the form factors and the way your user is going to use it. But aside from that, you'll be able to share quite a bit of stuff. So I really wanted to quickly run through a couple of just scenarios that are going to be common in pretty much every app we've built. We'll run through these and then really get into code and how we build a lot of this stuff. So in landing pages in Windows 8, so this is the Xbox Games app, you'll see usually just it's content. We've heard this a million times, content over Chrome. It's pretty easy to design. You want a nice engaging experience. This is going to be horizontally scrolling, and it's grouped by section using a grid view. This is extremely common. You're going to see these all over the place. In Windows Phone, we typically see a panorama, and it's slightly different experience, obviously smaller, more condensed screen, and this is my best PowerPoint animations to simulate this panorama. And you can see you kind of pan across it a little bit, and it's horizontally and vertically scrolling, a slightly different experience, but you can tell right away looking at these side by side. These are the same languages. The user would feel immediately familiar using both of these apps. Lists of data are extremely common. You are going to have lists of data in almost all of your apps. Again, we use the grid view control. We're going to see a lot of horizontal scrolling, possibly grouped, and then we'll use semantic zoom to quickly jump through this list of potentially millions of items. Windows Phone uses a control called the long list selector. It's vertically scrolling, again, optionally grouped any way you want, and use the jump list as our technique for bouncing through them. You can see the semantic zoom here on Windows, and then the jump list on Windows Phone. So very similar experiences. You'll probably use those a ton. App bar is another area. So app bars, again, very similar, but a little bit different. So in a Windows app bar, you can come down on the top and bottom. You can also support any content you want. You can template these things in any way. So a very common pattern we're seeing evolve is this navigation, a nice way to quickly jump into any section of an app that has maybe many layers. This is the Bing Finance app. And on the bottom, you see just the standard command buttons, which are getting a little better if you went to Tim Heuer's WinRT 8.1. By the way, everything you're seeing here is not vNext. So this is all Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8. You can use it now. It'll work the same in 8.1, but anything here you can use today. And the application bar in Windows Phone is a little different. It just has the circular buttons you'll see at the bottom, or you can have menus, but you can't template this any way you want. So this comes in, the reason I like to highlight this is because it makes you think about how your app's going to navigate. In Windows, you can build these rich hierarchies across the top to quickly jump between things. You'll have to come up with a different navigation paradigm for when you're building and kind of sketching out your Windows Phone app and how you want that to look. And lastly, and it's a pretty important one, is back buttons. Obviously, Windows PCs have no physical back buttons, so they're going to be on the screen all the time. And in Windows Phone, it should never be on the screen. Every Windows Phone will have a back button, so you should never really put a back button on your screen. It wastes real estate, and it could be potentially confusing. So just kind of keep that in mind, and these are a few of the common things you're going to see. I also want to talk about my personal favorite. And this is Twitter today, snapped on a Surface. And here's that same product, same Twitter app, running in Windows Phone. Not arguably the best screenshot I could have put together, but you can really see the similarities here. I mean, these apps definitely share a design language. They feel like the modern design language, but they also still feel like Twitter. And I just think this is a really good example of building for both and having users feel comfortable in both. And really to wrap up this section, I just want to kind of highlight that inspiration is everywhere. Twitter's, I think, a good example. And just think that design is more than your just the appearance. So again, it's how it operates, it's your navigation, your info architecture, the way you structure things. But I personally am not a designer. I'm not even a dev designer. I like the modern design language because I don't need any Photoshop skills whatsoever. I can build these things because I pay attention to the details. This modern language is not lack of design. It's alignment's key. Just pay attention to the details and sketch out some things. Like how you want your apps to use. If you're building a Windows Phone app, someone will probably be using it differently than if they're on their laptop, may or may not have a touchscreen. Just think about these use cases when you're building it. Don't plan on building, unless it makes sense, the exact same app for both, and just try and reuse where you can. And with that, let's get into developing for both. When you are developing these apps and you want to share code, you can do it the tried and true way that we've always done, and that's sharing an assembly. So, right, so that's building a class library. You've got a bunch of code in your UI project. You want to extract it out to a library so that you can now reference it in another .NET app. It's slightly different when you talk about cross-platform. So Windows and Windows Phone are very similar. and .NET for another example. Silverlight's another one. These are all slightly different platforms. And to bridge that gap, Microsoft provides us in Visual Studio 2012 and 2010 portable class libraries. And what these are, when you file new a portable class library, as we get into the demo, you're going to select which platforms you want to support. And the beautiful thing is that the tooling will limit that API surface area, IntelliSense and everything, to just what's cross-compatible between all of those. So if you were to select Xbox 360 here, you would get a much smaller surface area, maybe a handful of just the primitives, for example. And if you want to support lower frameworks, you start to lose features that were provided later on. So for example, tasks, right? So the TPL, if you reference Silverlight 4, you're not going to get the TPL. So with that, let's flip over and take a look at PCLs. So I've got, this is basically an empty project. Ignore that it's real world stocks. These are essentially just file new projects with WinRT and Windows Phone. There's not a lot in here. So what I want to do is build this core library that both of these can use. So I'm going to say add, I'm going to go to new project. I'm going to select portable class library. You'll see it in the Windows section. And we're just going to call this guy realworldstocks.core. And here's that dialog I showed you. So we can select which frameworks we want. Do we just want .NET 4 and higher? We're going to uncheck Silverlight. We want Windows Phone 7. For this talk, we're going to do Windows Phone 8. Windows Phone 7 can still do async with the BCL async NuGet package, which is great. But for simplicity, we're just going to do Windows Phone 8 and .NET for Windows Phone apps, Windows Store apps. And now we've got this class library like any class library you've ever seen in your life. It even comes with the extremely helpful class 1. We're going to reference this, again, going to our solution, selecting the core project from here, and down in WinRT, we will do the same thing. Right-click, add reference. So I've got a reference to both of these realworldstocks.core library. Let's make it do something. Delete this, and I'm going to just bring in, for the sake of time, I'm going to show this weather service. And I think this is a good example of things that you're going to see in the real world. And that's, you're going to make a web call. Right? You're going to probably get some JSON back, and you're probably going to want to parse that. Many of you probably either use the data contract JSON serializer that's built in. I personally like to use JSON.NET. So you can see I've got a couple missing references here. We're going to bring those in just like we always do. Hopefully, by now, everyone's playing with NuGet and using NuGet. If we go to manage NuGet packages, the first thing we're going to want to do is look online for JSON.NET. Oops, let's just find that one. And the cool thing is JSON.NET is built as a portable class library in this instance. So this is an important thing to keep in mind when you create a portable class library. It can only reference other portable class libraries. If you have this amazing .NET 4.5 assembly that you want to reference from your PCL, it won't be able to. You have to port that to a PCL. So one of the downsides of PCL. Thankfully, a lot of popular frameworks that you're going to use are already going to be supported. And with NuGet, it automatically detects what platform you're in and brings in the right one. So I don't even have to know that there's a portable version of this. If you're a fan of the package console, we can do the same thing. Let's bring in Microsoft.NET.HTTP. This will be your single best friend when you're doing cross-platform web development. That's, again, Microsoft.NET.HTTP. And that's going to give us the... Actually, let me do pre-release just in case. That's going to give us the HTTP client, which is this awesome client-side library. It's a nice, beautiful, awaitable abstraction over, say, HTTP web requests or all those kind of old infrastructure-type classes we've been using all along. So now I've got some new references. I've got HTTP client here, and I'm just going to quickly run through this. We're building a weather service, right? So we want to be able to get weather from Windows Phone and Windows 8. So here's our nice core abstraction called weather service, and we're going to say get forecast async. We're going to pass in a city. So I'm using this open weather API. Here's my URL. I'm just building a URL and query string. Newing up the client, going to say get async. Again, all nice and awaitable. And if I get a success status code back from that service, I'm going to read the content, read that JSON back, and then I'm going to use JSON.NET and say deserialize object async, and I'm going to turn in this weather response, which is just a quick class I've mapped to the JSON payload you're going to get back. So if we head over to phone, because you already referenced our project, let's go ahead and consume this guy. So we bring in, we're going to just new up our weather service. So this is just our unnavigated too. As soon as this page gets navigated, we're going to run this event handler. We're going to new up our weather service. We're going to say await get weather for San Francisco. And then we've got a couple text box, so temp.text and humidity.text. So if we run that and network's working, we'll see a very primitive app that says it's currently 81.95 degrees out there and it's about a humidity of 67. So pretty cool, right? We can now, for brevity, I'm not going to make you go through all this, but if I want to just copy-paste this code and go down into our WinRT app, you can see I can do the exact same thing. I don't want to bore you with building that lovely UI you saw on the phone app, but this is great. You can now build these plumbing APIs. You can build your web layer, your JSON parsing, all your models, put it into a PCL, and just immediately reference it. It's just there. You obviously get full IntelliSense, weather.getForecastAsync. We can see it's awaitable. We can see it takes a city. So it's just like every class library you've ever written. You can step over it. It's not going to be any different than anything you've ever done. So that's PCLs. They're pretty cool. We're going to talk later about a couple patterns that make them a little better. The other way of sharing is going to be sharing source code. Okay, this is the thing we've been doing forever, and that is Control-C, Control-V. That's sharing source code, right? Truthfully, yes. I put this in there as a joke, but truthfully, you will be copy-pasting code. Obligatory meme. When? A lot of XAML, okay? So in those two apps you saw, the two stocks apps, similar UI, not identical, but if I've already got some XAML written for Windows Phone, it's great to just copy-paste that snippet and start tweaking it. It's a good starting point. If ever you're going to be modifying something, and you'll be copy-pasting code. I don't want to pretend. The reason I call this talk real talk is because this is not, you know, there are realities that you'll have to keep in mind. You will be copy-pasting code. You just have to be responsible about it. And I really wanted to drive that home that this isn't a complete dismissal of copying code. However, there are better ways. Linked files is one. So this is an ugly dialogue. If you are just getting into this, you will never have to see this dialogue, but I do want to show you the older way of doing it. So if I've got this class file in my Windows Phone project, and I want to bring it over to Windows 8, for example, you can right-click in your Solution Explorer, say Add Existing Item. Maybe you've done that before. You're going to get the standard File Explorer. But there's this kind of arrow that you may have never ever seen in your entire life, this drop-down arrow. And when I pick that file and say Add as Link, what you're going to get, and hopefully you can see it, but there are tiny little shortcut overlays over those files. And what this means is those are the same exact file on disk. So if you change it in one, it's going to change in the other. It's really neat, and we're going to really get into that too. There is a better way, and I can't stress this enough because this is not documented anywhere that I can see. If I want to link all those converters, I want that whole folder to come over. The new way you can do this is just hold Alt, drag that folder down. We're going to demo this, but drag that folder down, and it will link all of them. It's a simple drag and drop. Just hold Alt, and it will link everything. It's beautiful. Let's show linking files. So back in our silly real-world stocks that we've determined needs to show the weather, we are going to we're going to talk about saving files. So this is a completely contrived example. You'll have to forgive that. But I've written in my phone project this local storage helper, just a really nice way to abstract over application data.current, create file async, open for read, give me a data reader, start reading it, and then read the string. I don't want to call it all the time. All I want to say is, local storage helper, go ahead and just read me that file. So I got this great helper that I want down in Windows 8. So I could move this into my PCL, only that's not going to work because this application data, this lives in the windows.storage namespace. Windows is obviously a platform namespace. It will not be supported in your PCL. PCL is the most common subset of the base class library. Because if they were to provide the Windows namespace, you wouldn't be able to use it in your ASP.NET app. It would be, I don't know what Windows.application data is. So you'll have to put this in your UI layer at some point. But Windows RT and Windows Phone 8 share this library. So I really would love to share this file without copying and pasting it. This is where linking files comes in really helpful. So I was going to bore you showing you the old way, the add as link, but I'm just going to show you the one and only way you should ever link files, and that is to hold Alt and drag this folder. Sure, save the document. And you can see, hopefully, it's got a tiny little shortcut overlay on it. And yes. And if there were more files in there, it would have linked all of them. And all this means is this is the exact same file on both. If I change it in one project, it's going to change it in the other. Be mindful of that. There are things you need to keep in mind that, you know, you're changing this file, it will change in another project. But this is beautiful, because now I've got my local storage helper in Windows 8 and Windows Phone. Very cool stuff. So linking files, a lot of times, will work perfectly. But sometimes there will be slight differences. And when that happens, we'll use things that have been around since the dawn of, well, I only go back to some C-style programming, but anyway, compiler directives, right? Pound ifs. You may have never seen these, or maybe you haven't seen them in a long time. These are coming back with a vengeance. You want to tweak the file just a little bit for the platform. The cool thing about linking files is that they're being compiled on that platform. It's not a DLL you're creating, so you're sharing this raw source file. So depending on the platform compiling it, you can tweak it a little bit. If you've got an API signature a little bit different, a really common example is your dispatcher. So the Windows Phone dispatcher, which invokes things on the UI thread, is a begin invoke. In WinRT, you've got dispatcher.run async, and then you have to pass it a priority, so slightly different. But if you've got this source file that's 300 lines of code, and this is your only line that's different, you pound if it out, and that will tweak itself based on the platform compiling it. So let's real quickly run through that. Here's something that, this is the simplest way I can show you. I've now brought over my local storage helper, .saveAsync. This beautiful helper, I can write to a file, I can write the contents high, this is awesome. But something that kind of bothers me, because I am a little bit of a perfectionist and a code purist when I look at these things, if you looked closely when I imported that namespace, it's actually realworldstocks.ui.phone is where that lives, because the file I wrote that I linked was in that namespace. I don't personally like phone namespaces polluting that for me. So here's one possibly dirty way to get around this. So when I have this file defined, I can pound if Windows Phone, give it that namespace, and pound if NetFX Core, give it another namespace. It's a kind of maybe contrived example. But now, oops, not WinRTS. Now when I go over here, now this neat namespace doesn't even exist. There is no .phone namespace for this. It's now just realworldstocks.ui.winrt. But if I were to show you that same exact file from my Windows Phone project, if I were to bring in that same line, you're going to see it lives in realworldstocks.phone.ui. So this is a nice way. It's a kind of simple way to demonstrate pound if declarations. Platforms that you're going to look for, Windows Phone is a common one. You might wonder where these came from. Is Windows Phone some magic string? You may want to add your own. This has been very useful in the past. If you go into properties for the project and go to the build section, you're going to see these conditional compilation symbols. This is why Windows Phone gets compiled into that project. That's how this works. And if you look at WinRT, you're going to see NetFX Core. That's the name they chose. You can make up your own if you want to pound if certain things out. But this is a really cool way, really powerful way to start sharing source code without mucking it up, if so to speak. I'm going to show you a better way to do namespace sharing, though. So let's do a really quick comparison. Sharing an assembly, a PCL, code remains clean, single purpose. Pound ifs get ugly a little bit. You have this assembly that you can just reference. I can give it to a guy building an Azure service on .NET. He can use it. Beautiful. Gets full IntelliSense. You have limited API access, though. And as I mentioned, you cannot reference non-PCL assemblies. So this great .NET library you have, you probably won't be able to use it from your Windows Phone app or your PCL. Slight bummer, this will also not work with Express SKUs. So they're just not part of those SKUs. as far as I can tell. That may be changing in 2013. Not 100% on that. But as of today, they do not work that way. Sharing source code. Full API access on the platform that's compiling it. This is really important. The platform is compiling this code. So you have full API access. You can do anything you want. And you can tweak that source per platform using pound ifs. Downside, I won't lie to you, code can become complex if you go crazy with compiler directives. There will come a point where you'll say, these files probably diverge a little too much. We might want to just copy-paste them and have them be independent files. I'm telling you, you want to keep all of this with, there's one big gray area. If I could summarize this talk in one thing, it's one big gray area, and I just want to give you the tools and the patterns to apply them. This is not, do this in every single way. And there are those minor Visual Studio quirks. You may have seen this document's already open. So if you already have it open from one project, and then you try and open it from another, Visual Studio gets a little confused. You just have to close it and open the other one. TLDR. Use them both. That is what I try to summarize. Just, you'll be using them both. Mix and match them. You will love both of them, eventually. The last part, just use your skills, okay? You know C Sharp. You know .NET. You know and love XAML, right? Okay, cool. Let's talk about architecture and patterns. This is my only block diagram in this guy. You can use any .NET language, yes. So you could, well, with PCLs, I think you could just use VB.NET and C#, is my understanding. Maybe F# if you're crazy. Windows Phone does support C++ now. Correct, in Windows Phone 8. So my block diagram. This is a common architecture I've had on literally every single project I've built that has shared code. We have a portable class library down at the bottom. You're going to have your models. You're going to have your web services. You're going to have anything you can put in this guy. And then on top of them are going to be two similar but different platforms. And that's Windows Phone and Windows. They're both going to inherit from core. And there's a couple techniques that you may want to apply, again, responsibly, and that's if you notice that you've got view models, so I am making an assumption in this, and I'm not really going to talk about MVVM. I might do a quick cursory run through. I'm hoping you have seen MVVM or at least have the basics so that you can follow this along. But the idea, of course, being that you've got this view model that represents the logic and the data and the flow of your view. One, because it's testable now. You're completely decoupled from the UI. And two, because XAML bindings and commands are very powerful, and they really are a clean separation. So you've got these plain code files, right, these view models that have a lot of logic, maybe a lot of data. You may find yourself, well, cool, I've got this home screen on one, I've got this home screen on the other. These view models, as I'm writing them, I'm noticing they're like 90% the same. You can take this one of two ways. You can either make a base class for your view model, call it home view core, or view models core, and then provide some virtual methods you're going to override so you'd inherit from your view models, or you could just link them. Again, I'll show a little bit of both those techniques. The other thing you're probably going to want to do is link files, your controls, some WinRT helpers maybe, like that storage helper, anything that's UI specific, you can try and link those if you have the same controls across them, and your converters, right? So XAML data binding converters, you can link those very easily. And then you're going to have stuff that are nowhere the same at all. They are going to either be copy-pasted or just they're going to be different, and that's your views. Your app startup and life cycle, there are different life cycles between Windows and Windows Phone. That code will be entirely independent. And this is eventually what you're going to see. So with that, we are going to spend a healthy amount of time in Visual Studio looking at the app that we saw earlier, right? So real-world stocks. And what I want to do to try and tell this story, we've got the phone app. Okay, I've built this app. So the story here is that I've built this app for Windows Phone, and I really want to port this to Windows 8. So we're going to go through a couple practices and a couple processes in doing that. Again, I can't stress this enough. This is architecture. This is opinionated. This is gray area. This is not a silver bullet. I just hopefully that you, when you take this away, you'll start thinking about things and hopefully not fall into some of the pitfalls I had to learn in trying to reuse a lot of this code and just mix and match these. But this is not the one true way to build every shared app. So keep that in mind. We're going to start by looking at our home view. which has this that panorama on it. Again, it doesn't really do much. It has a long list selector that's binding to my watch list item. So we've got one section for the watch list, and then you've got another panorama section for the news. And all this is really doing is binding to news. So news exists as a property in my home view model. This is not using any frameworks for the sake of simplicity, so I'm using what's maybe considered poor man's MVVM. I'm just doing it manually. So if you look at the code behind of this file, in the constructor, I'm simply instantiating a type called viewModel, which sets the data context, which is the XAML binding origin that everything is going to bind off of, and I'm just setting it to the viewModel. So I'm just newing it up in my view and data binding some stuff. And then unnavigated to is how I tell the viewModel, hey, I am ready to go. Let's fire up some data. I'm just going to say viewModel.loadAsync. So again, no logic in my view. This is cool. I'm not trying to preach MVVM by any means or saying you'll never have code behind or keep your code behind silly. But the more you can put into this view model, the more this is just a standard class file. This is literally just a C# file that happens to inherit from notify object. But it's totally testable and instrumentable. You can, what does load data mean? Well, yeah, in production, it goes out to the network and downloads some data. But if I want to test that or simulate that with no network and test things, this is the beautiful part of making view models. So I've got a couple observable collections. That's the type that automatically XAML is aware of these types, and it will say, hey, you added an item. I'll go ahead and update the UI for you. These are nice things. So I'm just providing this collection and newing it up to an empty one. I have a property I bind to that's isBusy. You kind of maybe saw that at the top. There's those loading indicators at the top that show up if I say isBusy. And then I've got my load async logic. So I'm going to say, hey, if I'm already busy, so this is my silly hack to prevent people from just spamming the refresh button while the request is still going on. If it's already busy, I'm just going to dump out. Otherwise, I'm going to say, hey, I'm busy. That tells the UI that we've got stuff loading up. I'm going to say watch list initialize. I won't really get into the details of this, but the watch list is a class I've put in my PCL that contains the list of my favorite stocks. A watch list isn't that good if it doesn't know how to change itself. What stocks do I care about, for example? So I'm just going to say initialize, which is going to deserialize that data from ISO store so that it persists between sessions. And then I'm basically just going to say, go ahead and repopulate these. Watchlist.current, go ahead and refresh your snapshots. Again, just to quickly dive in, we're now in the core project, so anyone can use this. And I'm calling up this Yahoo stock service saying get snapshots. And lovely enough, Yahoo's finance uses CSV, so I parse columns. But lovely enough that this is in a PCL and in core, so that no one even knows that I'm parsing this these CSVs. My UI is very clean and succinct. So what we want to do, we want to move this view model over to WinRT. First thing you might think is obviously just copy paste or link it, right? And these are, I didn't mean that sarcastically in any way. That's a gut reaction. You want to copy paste because it's a good starting point and it's a totally viable option. We do that all the time with view models. Because this is where I wanted to talk about design and kind of emphasize design, not as the what does it look like, but how does the user use it. And the design in Windows 8 is slightly different. We've got one grid view that's grouped. So it's a slightly different data model. So again, for brevity, I'm going to skip that. But what I really want to do here is I know that I'm going to be loading up data in a slightly different format, but a lot of this is reusable. So all I'm going to do is take this object, I'm going to cut this code, and I'm going to go into core, and I'm going to go and just make, oops, don't know what I just clicked on. Okay, find results. I'm going to right click, add a class. I'm going to call it home view model core. Wow. What did I select? Control? Hang on. Oh, I must have clicked component. There it is. Let's paste this guy. Paste our logic. We're going to inherit from notify object. Bring in those references. Cool. So now I've got this base class. Again, this is copied into my PCL. PCL has access to types like observable collection and notify object, so you can do bindings in the PCL, which is nice. And then in this guy, in the phone one, I'm just going to go ahead and inherit from that. And I don't have to do anything. Now I just moved it to a base class. So now obviously what we need to do is we're going to use that same class and that same view model. We're going to create our home view model here. And we're going to inherit from that base class again. Cool. And again, to save you from some time, I'm going to paste in this guy. And the first thing you're going to see that is broken is I made load async virtual. So I want to be able to override that, right? So we've been doing inheritance for who knows how long. So I'm just going to say, make this virtual so that Windows Phone is just going to use the default implementation. WinRT is going to say, I'm going to load the base. I'm going to get the base data, but then I'm going to put these into some groups. And all that means is that the Windows, it's just the way the WinRT grid view works, so that when you see that horizontally panning thing, it's just grouped instead of where we had a panorama section at the time. So this, again, a little, hopefully, oh, something I should say, though, the full source code of this will be provided within about a day. I'll put up my blog in the URL. So I encourage you to download these projects while I quickly kind of fly through things if you do want to see some techniques for how things were put together. Okay, so we've got a couple view models. We've got a home view model in RT. We've got a home view model in Windows Phone, which just inherits from the base, doesn't have to do anything special. And now we've got our shared view models. Easy enough. The final thing is we need to wire them up. So this is where you're going to see some very similar code. In the home view, I'm going to go ahead and just new up this view model. Bring in this guy. Cool. And all this is doing, same thing. It's a view, code behind, right? So now we're in WinRT, we're in the code behind, we're newing up a view model, and instead of onNavigate2, we're saying onLoadState, and we're just saying viewModel.loadAsync. Again, these are very simple boilerplate views, sharing a ton of business logic in the view model, which I've put in the PCL. It's optional to put your view models in the PCL. If they diverge a ton and your apps are very different between them, I don't recommend this approach. You'll end up making everything virtual, you'll override everything, and it will make it kind of complicated to find the code that you're really looking for. Like, what did that? So you will sometimes just think about it, and this is, again, why I'm stressing the design part. Plan your app out, sketch them out on some paper, think about how people are going to use them, and then make the decision, are these view models more similar or more different? And based on where you think that, try and make a decision, say, okay, let's go with the base class, or let's link them. Again, you can do linked files you can pound if some different stuff too. So one technique, that's sharing view models in core. I want to talk about improving linking. Again, this is an optional thing, but it's a technique we've been doing at work for a little bit. So I go into my, let me link over some converters. So the next thing my Windows 8 app needs are a bunch of converters. So Boolean divisibility, all the base converters. I've got one called relative date time, right? So that's going to take a date and make it say 35 minutes ago. If you looked at the news on this app, you're going to see it says, you know, the news was from 3 minutes ago or whatever. So I've got this nice handy converter, 14 minutes ago, 18 minutes ago, 28 minutes ago. Handy converter that just turns a date time object into a nice friendly string. I want all those. I wrote on my Windows Phone. I don't want to rewrite them for Windows 8. So I'm going to hold Alt. I don't want to do that. I'm going to delete this converters folder. Now I'm going to drag it down. Look at that. Linked all my converters for me. Beautiful. These are the exact same files, just linked across. So now I've got some nice converters. Now, that problem will appear that I showed you earlier, and that's the namespace problem. I wrote all these converters in my phone namespace, and I really, you will get incredibly tired of pound-iffing all of your namespaces if you have to. Another common use of the pound if is going to be your using statements. One side effect of the new XAML stack is that it lives in a different namespace than the Windows Phone XAML stack, which is system.windows.controls. In WinRT, you've got windows.ui.xaml. So a lot of the same types, just in different namespaces. So if you end up linking files, you might have to pound ifs in different using statements. But then the rest of the code, the meat of the code, is all exactly the same. So I mentioned I had a solution, which I think is, we personally like it. I do not namespace my two projects. So if I go into WinRT properties, I set the default namespace to just .ui. I don't put .ui.winrt, which is how it would come by default. It's just .ui. And if you look in Windows Phone, same namespace, realworldstocks.ui. That just puts everything in realworldstocks.ui. That's descriptive enough for me for a namespace scope, and I don't have to deal with linking files and cross-polluting my namespaces. One's phone, one's not. This is a technique that, play with it. You might not like it. Some people are very specific about their namespaces, and that's totally okay. But just be aware that when you link these files, they're going to have conflicting namespaces. Let's talk about this control. So I wrote this awesome control. Go ahead and look right here. I'll restart the app. This awesome control that animates beautifully. It rotates up or down, and it colors itself yellow or red. I want to reuse that as well. I want to copy that over to Windows 8 and be able to use that. Linking is going to come to our resolve again. So let me collapse some of this stuff. And I'm just going to bring this price change arrow, and I'm going to take it down to my controls. And if you look at this file, this is the real one. I'm not going to bore you with typing all of this. But here's this full piece of code. So this is the meat of it. Okay, this is the logic. We're setting some visual states. The business logic is checking whether the price is greater than or equal to zero. If so, I'm going to set a positive visual state. But you'll notice some pound ifs floating in the middle. And these are unfortunate side effects as these two platforms were kind of being developed potentially at the same time. There were minor changes. So let's go to the top. When I inherit from the control type, in Windows 8, it's when you apply template, which is how you give your UI, your control, some appearance, it's a protected method. In control for Windows Phone, it's a public method. So this is a slightly nuisance that you have to think about, and most of the code is, again, the same. The other thing is I'm hooking up to a layout updated event, so I've got my event handler here. In Windows 8, the signature for this event handler is object sender object E. In Windows Phone, the signature is object sender event args E. So I've got a slightly different event signature. So this is just one way where you can kind of tackle these minor differences, but still share. If this were a bigger control, those would be really the two real pound ifs you would have. But then the rest of this control is very similar. Again, think about this as you start to pound if. If you see yourself having a ton of them, it may be better to just copy-paste them and have separate files. Don't go pound if crazy. It'll become a little bit of a maintenance struggle. So we've got our control moved over. I'm going to head over to my generic.xaml. Here is our good friend legitimately copy-paste. And we're going to bring over the style for this control. I know you can't really see that. But this is just the style for that control that we have. We're also now going to bring in our converters. Beautiful, beautiful. So now we've given it a look. If you haven't written a control before, all this is doing is we've got our business logic for the control. That was that CS file. And then we're going to give it some XAML that represents it. And this is where we're writing visual states that translate the arrow, positive or negative. I love this paradigm of writing XAML controls where you've got the logic totally separated from the view so that anyone can retemple this at any time without ever, say, inheriting my class and changing things. So now I've got this view, which happens to be exactly the same. And I'm going to go ahead and reference it right here. So if you were to look at this template right now in Windows 8, we don't have a price change arrow. It's just an empty box with no fancy arrow. So to bring the arrow back, we're just going to drop that guy in. We're saying, hey, go ahead and put a price change arrow right here. We're binding it to my days changed, giving it a width and height so it's a little bit bigger than on the Windows Phone one, completely restyling it. We've got all that logic for our phone now moved over. We're getting close. The final pattern I want to talk about, I've kind of been harping on that PCLs have limited API, right? Let's take an example of logging. Logging, pretty common plumbing infrastructure, pretty common thing. What if my logger, I've got this service I've written so that users using my apps and happen to have an unhandled exception, I want to log some stuff about their device. What's the model? Maybe how much memory does it have? I need access to that device stuff. So how can I access that from my PCL? Do I really want to write this logging infrastructure in my UI? And the answer is no, you probably don't. So here's a pattern that has been relatively popular, and it has different names. It's nothing more than an abstraction, but I personally call it a platform adapter. So I'm in my PCL, and I'm going to say platform adapter.current, and I've got a couple things in here. So I can access the current device. I've got some properties. I can access the dispatcher. Again, I mentioned those are dispatched. So if I've got a background thread and I want to manipulate the UI, I need to hit up the dispatcher. This is pretty cool, having access to the dispatcher from a PCL, which has no idea what platform you're running on. I've got local storage. So if I want to, again, use that helper I wrote, so like reading and writing files. Now I'm reading and writing files from that PCL, but I have no idea where that storage is. Is it isolated storage on Windows Phone? Is it WinRT storage? You don't know, because I'm now using my platform adapter. If you look at these types, these are all interfaces, right? Anytime you write abstraction, you're either going to write a class or an interface that defines it, and then you're going to implement that somewhere. So in core, under platform, I've got my platform adapter right here. It's a totally abstract class, and whoever inherits this, I need you to fill in the details for me. So I don't know what an iDevice status is, but I need you to give me one so that I can pull out the name. So in phone, under platform, I've got my platform adapter impl. I'm not a huge fan of the suffix, but it had to do for now. And I'm going to go ahead and provide these properties. For your iDevice status, I'm going to give you this device status object that I wrote. And it's just going to type forward stuff to microsoft.phone.info.devicestatus.name. Cool. Now I'm at runtime forwarding at Windows Phone, forwarding to this. If I look at this same code under WinRT platform adapter, you look at the impl and look at the device status, it's a totally different API that I had to Google for. It's windows.security.exchange-active-sync-provisioning. For some reason, that's the product name. I don't know of a better one. Maybe it was a quick search. But now I've got the device name for my WinRT product. And I'm calling that, I'm logging that from core without having any idea what product I'm running on. Some other examples, so a dispatcher. I write my dispatcher with matching my interface for iDispatcher, and I'm forwarding along to the root frame dispatcher run async, and I'm hitting the Windows dispatcher. On Windows Phone, my dispatcher this is a neat thing if you haven't done much task stuff. I'm turning a non-task-based API into a task one so that I can await it. This is great when you're starting to see you're working with legacy APIs that aren't quite task-based yet, so you use this task completion source. Not going to get into the details on it. There are probably a number of talks on async, but this is neat. So now I'm hiding a lot of this complexity behind this dispatcher object, but my platform adapter, say I wanted to use it right here. I just say platform adapter.current.dispatcher.go and invoke this action. I'm going to give it a method that's just going to, I don't know, do nothing. Log this. So now if I wanted my log to run, say, on the UI thread for some reason, I can now access the dispatcher at runtime without even knowing about it. So the final piece to hooking that up is in your app startup. So platform adapter.current, I of course have to set that up somehow, right? So let me put this back. So in your startup for each of your platforms, right in the app constructor, you're going to say platform adapter.current is going to be that platform adapter impl. You're going to do that in your WinRT project, and you're going to do that in your Windows Phone one. So you're providing a concrete implementation of the platform adapter. This is a really neat pattern for putting more in your core assembly, just putting as much as you can so that you're not copying as much. And you can see, combining them, again, I do want to stress this is a mix and match type thing. So here I was writing my Windows Phone iLocal storage, and I realized, wait a sec, this exact same code can be used for Windows 8. So now I'm just linking that local storage down there. So even though I've defined the interface in PCL, I'm sharing that implementation between the two. So you'll see a lot of this mix and match techniques. Just use best judgment, see what you can do. Now I'm nervous to even try this. See if we got everything right. We can try and run it. Nope, demo failure. I don't remember what I forgot. But we've ported probably, I'll say, 99% of the logic that's going to build up this build up our Windows 8 app. So we ported a lot of code. We ported a ton of converters. So if you looked at all those converters, we ported a lot of controls. We have a ton in our PCL. Some things that I'm actually out of time to talk about, some more things that can go into your PCL, are commands. So something I didn't demo is that if I tap on this guy, you can see this page isn't done, but you can see the stock symbol at the top. So I'm on a details view right now. And if I click this one, I'm on a different details view. So I'm passing this data along to the next page. So that's a command that I wrote called view stock details command. And I'm just going to say platformadapter.current.navigation.navigate2. This, again, is an optional pattern you won't always want to do because some of your navigation are very different. Windows Phone and Windows RT have similar but, again, different navigation models. So what I'm doing here is using a platform adapter to say, go ahead and navigate this. And at runtime, it's going to pull out the stuff it needs. So I'm just saying, hey, go to a stock details view. The implementation figures out how to actually navigate between those. So I reuse that entire tap on it to change products. Yeah, absolutely. So the question was, can you use, say, lambdas or even delegates or things like that to genericize rather than interfaces? And absolutely. So if you wanted to find, instead of making interfaces for things, if you just want to find a func of something and then provide an implementation for those, there are a few other ways of doing of handling the PCL abstractions. So let's summarize. What to share? In a PCL, absolutely all the time, well, probably, models, business logic, web services, helpers, and logging. This is great plumbing infrastructure stuff that you don't want to worry about. You just want to reference an assembly and bring it in. Possibly view models and commands from the form of maybe an abstract class or something you want to inherit or just throw it in there in commands. But again, I stress, if it makes sense, and it won't make sense for every project, and it might make sense for one project and not the other one. Linked source, converters, controls, or converters and commands. You can absolutely link those across. Those are great things to just file link. You can't put them in your PCLs because the converter namespace doesn't exist in PCL. And then controls, link those if it makes sense. You saw me link the price change arrow with some minor pound if directives. And then maybe view models. I didn't demo that, but maybe you have a view model that's very similar, and rather than making a base class in PCL, you just want to link them in pound ifs and differences. Again, if it makes sense. User interface, static assets, if you have iconography, if you have some the generic.xaml for my price change arrow, definitely share those. Yeah, share the design language. I know it's an abstract concept, but definitely share that in XAML. Negative. You cannot share XAML right now. They use different namespace import things that really make copy-pasting XAML not work. But that said, it's probably not something you want to do anyway. That's where copy-paste really will come in handy, is when you've got a template that you're just going to want to copy-paste and then tweak a little bit, because really they're going to look similar but different, and that's correct and that's good. Last slide, I think. Probably not. Mix and match techniques. This is just going to summarize everything. Architect with sharing in mind. Okay, think about this. Consistency is key. If you were to look at those two projects, Windows Phone and the Windows RT one, identical folder structures. Views, view models use the same MVVM patterns. Think about this stuff when you're doing it. Put as much in the PCL as possible. This is your core library. It's just, you get it for free when you reference it anywhere else. Use a platform adapter. My catchphrase, I should have put a TM around that. Do more in core. Use the platform adapter to start just putting more and more code into your PCL if possible. Use pound if conditions for minor code differences. Extension methods I didn't show, but that can be a great way to bridge API differences if you see some differences there. And then maximize the user experience for the platform. Think about how your users will use your product on different devices, and make sure you're tailoring it for that. Please don't just copy-paste the same view and think that that's going to make a compelling product, because it most likely won't. You'll have different navigation plans. You'll be doing different things. This is an important one, I think. I'm a huge fan of using other people's work to get my own work done faster. Stand on the shoulders of giants. There are some really great portable libraries. HTTP client, that's the one I demoed. An amazing async awaitable PCL HTTP stack that you can use and share. Use that one. PCL storage is a really cool one that'll abstract away ISO store differences. So it's just this library that you use, and it's all async and await. And then they have implementations for Windows Phone and Windows RT and .NET, so that you'll just have this PCL storage rather than writing your own simple helper like I did. Maybe use this one. Metrolog is a pretty cool logging framework that's cross-platform. And these aren't the same, this MVVM side, but these frameworks will help you achieve consistency in your workflows, your app life cycles. I'm a huge fan of Caliburn Micro, so they have a Windows Phone version and they have a Windows RT version. It brings you all the same types and the same workflow, the same base class that just really make building these apps feel natural. And a developer that maybe you're trying to onboard and they know Windows Phone, but you're trying to teach them Windows 8, they'll know the navigation patterns, they'll know the conventions of that framework, and you know, maybe find one you like and kind of stick with it. MVVM Lite's another really popular one. And then please try it yourself. Please download that app. I encourage you to check it out. I'm going to put it at bit.ly. I should have stressed, in a few days, I will get to it. I just need to put it up and just write the blog post. But it's going to be at build real world stocks. Should have put a QR code, but the talk will be hopefully recorded in 48 hours. There are some related sessions. Immediately following this will be a cool one if you really want to see more real world than my real world. Nokia, Matthew Cooper is going to be talking about Nokia Music and the story of bringing that from Windows Phone to Windows Store. So I'm excited to check that one out. There's a Windows Phone Dev Best Practice tomorrow at 10:30. And there's MVVM Action, which is going to be a Hulu case study. That's tomorrow at noon. So I encourage you to check those out. Some references, again, these are just links. Please click on these if you do download the slides. These people were a great help in me building up some techniques for this, and they've just been great in the code sharing space. So this is cool for those of you at Build right now. There's a sharing code meetup today at 6 p.m. at the Microsoft office, so down at 835 Market Street. Drinks and appetizers will be provided. If you are interested in this, have some opinions or questions, please, since I'm running very low on time, I'd love to talk to anyone who has some thoughts on this, get some feedback on maybe they've been trying it or maybe trying to get into it. But some Microsoft employees, other speakers will be there. The Hulu guys will be talking about some of the apps they built. So cool stuff if you want to go there at 6 p.m. today. Thank you. I will take one question, and then I have to invent a question for the giveaway. Yes. Okay, that's a really good topic I didn't cover. So he asked, what about partial classes in code sharing? I do like that technique. I didn't talk about it for brevity, but that is another great way of maybe putting some base stuff into a partial class, copying that, and then providing the other half of the partial. Again, all these things have, they make navigating to what's actually happening a little harder in all these techniques. So it's really going to be play with it and put some thought into it. But yeah, that's definitely one technique worth trying. Any other questions? Yes. Okay, sharing resources. I don't have a good answer for that. You mean resource strings like localization? I don't have a good answer. Windows uses ResW and Windows Phone uses ResX. That's really, I haven't played with it much. We've been duplicating ours. There may be a better answer. Someone convinced me that they had a better solution. I just have never seen it. So I'm sorry, I don't have a better answer. Okay, the giveaway. Question is, what is the exact hex color of my Windows Phone shirt? Okay, that's not the real question. I wouldn't even know the answer. Literally, if you shouted out, I was going to give you the phone. What is the Visual Studio hotkey you're going to use to link files the new way? That was the first hand I saw. Hold, Alt, and Drag. Boom, nailed it. It's the one thing I want you to take away from this. Congratulations. You have a Lumia 920. Please, this is my first build talk, so I would love to hear your evaluations. There's the QR code. It's just a simple evaluation online. You don't have to do it today. You can do it at any time. But please, the evaluations, I think, are valuable. Thanks, everyone, for coming.